This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's 12:26 0-0 between the Rangers and New Jersey. What is it about afternoon hockey? I mean, I'm like, fine, but could you, like, play it at like 5 o'clock my time or 8 o'clock my time, because that's when I'm in the mood to watch a hockey game on a Saturday night. I know it's the long, May long weekend, we're all relaxed, but it's hard to get, you know, it's, you got yard work and stuff to do and shopping. Anyway, bitch and moan. By the way, we had the Oil Kings at Shawinigan last night, and that was a great game, a classic, and we'll talk to Ken Simpson about that later on. That was a great game, man, you know, and I crazy call, and then they give up another goal, and I feel bad for Keegan Lowe, because, you know, that guy is a really good defenseman. For that play to, you know, for him to overskate the puck, the ice must be dreadful. We'll find out exactly how dreadful with Kent later on in the show. But the rush play at Rochester, 5:30 tonight, right here on Team 1260 with Jason Greger. That's a huge, massive game. And obviously, we're thrilled to have it right here on Team 1260 Radio. So, a couple things we want to get to here before we go to Tom Lynn, player, agent, advisor, and attorney. Just a few things, comments today that are coming up, some really good ones in regard to the possibility of Sutter becoming the coach. And then I had also mentioned that, you know, I thought that maybe Taylor Hall should move from left wing to center. So Semenko and Troy posted at Oilers Nation, moving a strong-willed, powerful, and dynamic center skater from wing to center seemed to work for us a few years ago. Having a duo of Hall-Eberle pushing the play and drawing the opposition's best defenseman should create uber opportunity for the Nuge and Yakupov against second pairings. It's easier to find develop complementary wingers for those combinations with Hall at center. I thought that was interesting. Now, there are some people who disagree with me. Stefan says, with all due respect, Eberle is our best player. I would put Taylor Hall at number three behind Eberle in the Nuge. Taylor Hall plays with his head down and gets torpedoed way too often, lacks the mental calmness that Eberle displays day in and day out. Hall needs to slow down at times and use his speed when needed, not full balls out the entire time. So, you know, Rennie is the fall. This is from Fight Club. Rennie is the fall guy for Tambellini's incompetence. How many bad deals does he have to make before it's obvious that he's the problem? He's picked a disastrous coach, worthless free agents, and made horrific trades. Well, Fight Club, if you could just get out there how you really feel. I do believe, and there's been a lot of reporting on it, Terry Jones, Mark Spector, several others, and I can't think right now, and I apologize for missing the name, but there's been some reporting in both newspapers that has been quite critical of Steve Tambellini, the way it happened in terms of not letting Tom Rennie know, and then also saying, you know, hey, the pressure is on right now in a big way, because, you know, Pat Quinn, you know, firing Craig McTavish, then bringing in Pat Quinn, that didn't work out. Tom Rennie, who I think we could all agree move the ball forward at some level. The NHL Oilers are better now than when Tom Rennie arrived, and certainly than you know, the days that J.F. Jacques was playing left wing with Horkoff and Hemsky under the Pat Quinn regime. So, you know, there's that. And then Steve Tambellini, a little bit under pressure now, because whoever he chooses for coach, and I think that's one of the reasons they didn't announce it right away that it was Sutter. I think there's some due diligence still to go on to see if any of these other guys shake loose. It looks like McClellan in San Jose will be staying. So that's a possibility, too. So I think that Steve Tambellini is under a lot of pressure, and I think that at some level anyway, the Edmonton Oilers are going to be very, very careful about choosing their next coach, and Steve Tambellini specifically probably hiring his last coach. That's just my opinion, but, you know, it's going to have to be a good one. My honest opinion is I can't see the Edmonton Oilers, with as much talent as they have on the ice right now, I cannot see them finishing anywhere near 29th, and that involves obviously getting some things done on defense, making sure you're covered in goal, just in case Nikolai Habibulin has done that, you know, late 30s, early 40s slide into the abyss. And I mean, it's nothing against Nikolai Habibulin. He's just got a lot of miles on him as a goaltender, and that's what happens when you're a certain age. And the contract, you know, looks like it was 1 or 2 years too long for Nikolai Habibulin. Some would say 4, but, you know, you get my drift. And so for the Edmonton Oilers, as long as they can do those things with Taylor Hall and the Nuge and Jordan Eberle and Sam Gagné and all those other guys up front, and if Ryan Whitney can come back healthy, that's a question mark. But they should be much better just based on the talent they have now, even aside from adding Neil Yakupov, which is a big, big, big item. And possibly if you don't draft him, you trade down, get Ryan Murray, and add another asset. It's 12:31. We're joined on the line by Tom Lynn, player advisor, agent, and attorney. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing well. It's too hot down here. We set a record for heat, but I'm mad at hockey weather.
Where are you?
I'm actually in Chicago for the USHL Combine, but the whole Midwest is under a heat wave.
So for someone like you, an executive, agent, that sort of thing, the off-season is busier than the regular season.
Yeah, it's funny how the rhythm goes. In the NHL for so many years, you had your schedule mapped out. You could buy plane tickets because you had July 1 free agency, and then arbitrations from July 20 to August 3rd, and you had the June 1 signing deadline for draft picks, the trade deadline at Christmas, and then kind of through the season, you knew when your busy times were. On the advisor and agency side, it's basically geared around tournaments and combines and stuff like that.
And the Hlinka starts, what, in August?
Yes.
So for scouts, it really is. You know, the draft's late June, and somebody's got to go over there and check out those kids at the Hlinka, and that's just a few weeks later.
Right. I mean, the amateur guys now are really squeezed because they basically get July off to a degree, but you got the camps, the Canada and U.S. national camps start first week in August, and then you've got to go over to Europe for a couple tournaments, and then you're into the training camps.
Crazy. I want to talk a little bit about the NHL teams leading up to the draft and how they prepare. And I'm not going to use the Oilers as an example, but it's an easy one that we can all follow. Say they want to add a solid quality veteran defenseman during the summer. They would have already obviously done their due diligence with the pro scouts and come up with a name. You know, Garrison's a free agent. Tootin's available, that sort of thing. At what point do they begin, after they've done their due diligence and found the information, what point do they begin a conversation with the other team on a specific player?
Now, that's a good question, because there's a scientific question of preparation, which I think a lot of teams do similarly as far as their scouting, gathering information. When you have the kind of May, June pro scouting meetings, you make those decisions. And the style side, which is really up to the GM, is another thing entirely. Some GMs like to make a lot of calls, throw information out there, try to figure out what's going on and gather information. Other ones, you know, like your classic slats in New York, keeps everything close to the vest. You know, and might jump you with a deal at the last second, but you don't know what he's thinking. Other GMs say, hey, I need X, Y, and Z. I'm giving up S, and if you're interested, call me. So the style there is so different that you never knew what a guy was going to come up with.
Whitey Herzog always said that he never mentioned the guy he wanted until the last minute. He would say, I want this guy. Well, you know what? What about that guy? And then that's right. The guy he wanted, which is crazy, but, I mean, it worked for Whitey.
Yeah, and, you know, some guys do that, and other people get to know it right away. And so the person they mention right at the last minute, they either think is the guy they really wanted or a guy they should keep. And I remember the story of Bobby Clark, and we were talking about trading for a player there, and we went on, and finally my boss said at the end, I'd like this player in the trade, and Bobby said, well, I'm not giving him up. And Doug said, why not? Because you want him. And Bobby didn't know who he was, but he knew we had a good scouting staff at the Wild. It was back in 2002. It was Eric Chouinard we were talking about.
Oh, okay.
And the player we mentioned before his name, Bobby said, I'm not giving up because you want him. So it's going to your point that some people are onto that.
When you were in Minnesota, how much of the actual truth made it to the media, to the mainstream media? I'm talking about national, but also local.
Well, as far as truth, I don't think there was a lot of sense of lies or something like that out there. But as far as, you know, the team reporting what they wanted, in a general sense, we were often pretty honest, you know, saying we need to be more physical on defense and we need a backup goalie. You know, that would be pretty honest. But as far as putting names or actual decision-making out there, you just couldn't do it, you know, simply because it would ruin what you were trying to do.
Right.
You can't do that type of thing publicly. A lot of people are analyzing it. When we're sitting down analyzing the other teams, partially by their depth charts, but also the NHL sends out the clips every day at every single team. And most teams have someone in the office go through all the teams and try to pick out stuff. So if a GM, say, in Calgary says, I'm really angry at Joe Smith, then, you know, we kind of note that, you know, or the coach or anyone else. So you're gathering that information. You don't want to put out there that we like player X better than player Y, because it can only be used against you, kind of like the Miranda warnings here in the United States. Anything you can, anything you say can and will be used against you.
There you go.
So most of what you see out there is strategic. Once in a while, you have a person who speaks his mind. I don't think it necessarily benefits them. The press loves it. Like, they love when Brett Hull was a GM. But it probably wasn't the best thing for the Dallas Stars.
Yeah, and it's funny because the major story this summer, and we'll get to the draft in a second, but is the story of the two Russians, in Nashville, curfew and then not playing, and it's sort of divisive because Don Cherry says that, you know, they should have played him. Then I've heard a lot of people, NHL people, say no, that was a great call, right thing to do. Does that get noticed too? Like, if you're a small market team, and I'll just use Columbus as an example, and you're interested in a player, and you think he might be a little devalued by the rest of the league, does that perk up your ears? Is that something you make a note of as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone tries to do that, but some teams are better than others, and some teams will take more risks than others. So in our circumstance with the Wild, I can remember players that we acquired who we knew had drug and alcohol histories in particular. But if they'd taken steps to address it, we figured, well, here's a guy who's undervalued because he struggled for 3 years, and, you know, now he's on the straight and narrow. He might come to the fore. Other guys had some, you know, other behavioral issues, like a Patrick O'Sullivan, who we looked into and decided it wasn't valid, you know, what he had going on. Mm-hmm. And so we tried to do that. Many teams will say they do it but don't want to take any risks. Other teams will go overboard. As you've seen, I probably won't mention them on the radio, but some teams have taken on too much baggage, hoping that, well, we got four guys with baggage, and sometimes they don't play hard, and sometimes they get in trouble off the ice. And that can be the wrong way to do it as well. You want your core not to include those guys, but you can sometimes get better by bringing them in.
In conversation with Tom Lynn, player advisor, agent, and attorney, the Oilers are in a situation. I think there's a possibility, and I'm reading tea leaves here, so bear with me. But they're in a bit of a sticky wicket now. The number one consensus overall pick is a Russian with great skill, maybe a knee concern, but a guy who is clearly number one. They have a massive need for a defenseman of the future, a foundation defenseman, and they may feel, I don't know that they do, but they may feel like Ryan Murray's the guy. And yet you've got Columbus right behind them who, you know, may want that defenseman too. And the fan base is looking at it and going, hey, we need more offense. Let's grab that guy. Is that the kind of thing, in an overview, I'm not asking you to speak specifically to that issue, but do organizations find themselves somewhat trapped? The winning the lottery hurt or hinder, or could possibly hurt or hinder the Oilers because they were already devoted to that one player?
That's a good question, because it all depends upon how much, you know, GM or management are willing to do what they see as right rather than what's expedient, you know, politically short term. We got to remember that with very few exceptions, and I'm probably thinking like 5 to 7 exceptions since the lockout, a player has not come in the year after being drafted and made an impact. And by impact, I mean made his team better. There are a number of teams that made teams, but, you know, Marin Gabber came in and scored 18 goals his first year. We're all excited because he's 18, but if I told you, you know, we signed a 34-year-old who came in and scored 18 goals, what's the difference, you'd say?
Right.
So for a player to actually come in, an elite player at that level, and make his team better generally takes 2 to 4 years, with a defenseman being on the longer side, because it takes longer to learn the position. Mm-hmm. So they've got to understand that as well and think, all right, are we going to think reality here and realize that our scoring woes won't be affected, you know, for at least 2 years by offensive pick, and our defense may not be helped for 3 to 4 years by a defensive pick? You know, fans and media be damned, who are expecting to connect those dots. That's how a team really has to approach it and look at it realistically. Once in a while you see Sidney Crosby, Ovechkin come down, you realize he'll step in earlier. I don't think that's the case here, and I don't think the conventional wisdom is the case that anyone in the top five is going to make their team better next year and possibly not the year after. But you're looking 3 seasons out for these guys to really make their team better.
Right. A couple of CBA questions to before we let you go, and I appreciate your time, Tom. Should we be concerned as fans that the two sides are acting like Joe Cool here, no negotiations, we're now into the, you know, later spring? Or is this, do you feel, the type of negotiation that could go quickly because both sides don't want to lose another year?
Yeah, I mean, I have no negative connotations coming from the lack of bargaining right now, because most of the bargaining gets done at the last minute, one. Number two, the history of at least, you know, one side of this debate has a history of doing all the bargaining at the last minute. Some people feel, and usually not at the table, some people feel, well, you should start talking early so you can get all the issues out and know what they are and everything else, you know, even if you resolve them at the last minute. However, you know, I don't know if that's the case. I think both sides know what their issues are. They have teams of lawyers on either side of analyzed everything and gone to their constituencies. I mean, what's really happening, I think, in a nutshell, is Don Fehr realizing that I should learn more from my players, you know, agents, staff, and all that for as long as possible, because the NHL traditionally doesn't move or really do anything in bargaining until the last minute. So if I'm going to spend 20 hours today working, I should work on my side rather than the other side.
Right.
So it doesn't mean anything as far as what gets done or doesn't get done.
One of the really thoughtful interviews and discussions I've read in the last several years was from Billy Guerin. He was quoted a while back saying basically that he lost a year, and his, you know, his generation of players lost a year, it impacted them, and he didn't feel like it was worth it, and he was passing it along to the next generation. Do you think that sort of thing from a respected veteran might have some sustain, or do you think the bad blood is still there from the previous negotiations and that will carry the day?
Well, first, there's a thoughtful interview with Billy Guerin, I want you to send me the link. that would be tremendous. you know, it was tough as an American to cheer for those teams for so many years. It was difficult, you know, when they went to Japan and trashed rooms and spoke out in the media and called our game a sucking game and all that. So that was tough. But as far as the point, which is a veteran saying, let's not go too far, geez, it's too early to tell because nothing's shaped up yet. I don't think anyone's thinking about Armageddon right now.
Mm-hmm.
They're thinking about, you know, their smaller issues, limits on contracts and trades and that type of thing. No one's thinking big time. I think quotes like that and pressure like that from influential figures in the game would be more relevant to the players' and owners' minds, you know, come October 1 or, you know, as things started to really get down to it.
That's great information. Tom, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
No problem.
All right. Tom Lynn, player advisor, agent, and attorney. Interesting guy. And you know what? I get so many questions from him. I hope I covered most of them. I've got a couple folks who've asked if they can email him stuff, and we'll talk later about that, because he's the one guest that I think that everybody has a question for, because it's such a unique situation. He's been on both sides of the, he's been obviously an assistant GM and GM in Minnesota, a player agent, and he has great, great answers. But some of the questions are kind of long for radio, so I hope you appreciate that, and we'll do our best to hook you up with him. And, he's very generous with his time, certainly with us anyway, and we appreciate it. Now, we got a very busy rest of the show. Bruce McCurdy from Cult of Hockey is going to be on. We're going to talk Oil Kings World Hockey Championships and obviously about the rainy changeover. And we also have Kent Simpson and Corey Pronman on the way before 2 o'clock today. So stay tuned. This is Nation Radio, brought to you by Edmonton Motors.